This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and our show is called Main Street because this is our virtual Main Street this time of day, all across North Dakota on the Prairie Public Network. Those real Main Streets that are the centerpieces of our communities are places where we meet and greet each other just like we do on the show, talk about what's on our mind, share news and opinions. And today, we're going to talk about a program called Think and Drink, which is a great title. Kayla Schmidt is the program coordinator for the North Dakota Humanities Council, which is behind this. She joins us from our Bismarck studio. Thanks for being with us, Kayla.
Absolutely.
And also with you is Dr. Ellie Shockley. She is the moderator of Think and Drink in Bismarck, and she joins us from that same studio. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Shockley.
Happy to be here.
Kayla, we've got one coming up in Minot this Sunday at the Tap Room. First of all, describe the Think and Drink program.
So really what we wanted to do is kind of break down those barriers when it comes to talking about the humanities. We have a lot of great discussions on university campuses and libraries, but a lot of times these places are intimidating to people. They think they have to come in with a certain level of knowledge before they can start talking about some of these big ideas. So we figured what better way than to go to a local pub or brewery, and then everybody gets a nice drink. You kind of sit down, get to know your neighbor, and so then we go ahead and we invite scholars from across North Dakota to present any kind of topic that has to do with the humanities, and we just have a discussion about whatever that may be.
And because of the think and drink part of it, it's 21 plus.
Yes, it is.
How did this get started?
We kind of look, so each state has its own humanities council, and a lot of them were experimenting kind of with this idea. We had someone approach us, and we thought, let's do this at the Laughing Sun. It's pretty close to our office in Bismarck, so it worked out with the proximity and with the business. So that was our first one, and we talked about facing suffering. So not really, you know, your typical barroom conversation, but it went really well. So we decided to continue it as a series after that.
Well, Dr. Shockley, you're a research analyst at Bismarck State College, and you moderate the next one in Bismarck, which is Investigating Biased Science. That will be Sunday, March 18th at the Laughing Sun, as Kayla mentioned. Describe the experience from your perspective.
Well, it just so happens that my background is in social psychology, which is the background of the guest speaker for that session. And in social psychology, there's just been a lot of issues lately with understanding the research methodologies and the statistics used. There's a lot of practices that it became very prevalent in social psychology that were not actually statistically tenable. There's this phenomenon called p-hacking, and that means that when you run a statistical test, there's a probability of finding the result that you did that could be due to chance. And so if you have a very small p-value, that means it's very unlikely that the observation is due to chance. And p-hacking is when you try really hard to look at your data this way, that way, to get a small p-value to emphasize, you know, how believable your result is. So p-hacking and other questionable research practices have been really been addressed in the last several years in social psychology. And it really does call into question a lot that about certain types of science. I mean, social psychology is actually not the only field doing this by any means. It's just gotten a lot of attention, and that's why I'm particularly aware of it.
Are TED Talks sort of somewhat problematic from this perspective?
Yeah, unfortunately they are, because the TED Talks may describe research findings that actually haven't been replicable. And so things may go viral without actually a lot of really sound science behind the conclusions. And so then people don't know what to believe. And so basically there's some science is in a state of crisis right now where folks are trying to figure out how do we move forward in making science people can have faith in. We already know that there's already a lot of questions about, you know, fake news. So this issue of potentially fake science is really concerning.
Well, science is sort of elemental to a lot of issues that we talk about these days, including climate change. And I think, Kayla, that was covered in a previous Think and Drink, wasn't it?
Yeah, we talked about moving beyond arguing about climate change. So kind of if we take both sides of people who view it from a different perspective, where do we all come together? And that was similar to our first one this year, which was prayers versus politics. So what really are the big values that all Americans hold, where we can kind of find some similarities, but also what are those differences and how do we talk about them?
So when people go to the Laughing Sun Brewing Company on a Sunday or the tap room in Minot on a Sunday and they sit down at that table with their brew, how would you describe the atmosphere? I mean, something like climate science could get contentious, but I take it it doesn't at a Think and Drink event.
You know, we were worried about that. You see people arguing on social media all the time, but what really happens, and that's the goal of the humanities and the Humanities Council, is when you're actually sitting next to someone, you know, you're both sharing a drink, you actually kind of want to get to know each other. You start having that conversation. You find commonalities. If you differ, you can say, well, here's what my background tells me about this experience. And people are a little bit more open to thinking about things in new ways. So there's definitely a little bit of nervous chatter in the room, but that's where the beer comes in.
And Ellie, do you have to do a little research before you set up to moderate one of these sessions?
It definitely helps. I consistently speak with the main presenter ahead of time. We talk about what that person has envisioned. We talk about what the accompanying handout might look like and just the general process. I had attended quite a few of these last year prior to now being my moderator role, so I have a lot of examples of how it can unfold successfully. So I just make sure I understand the content of what they want to discuss beforehand. And if there's reading to be done, you know, I'll do it. But generally, the conversations with the presenter has been adequate.
Now, are these conversations for the room total, or are these intimate at just the table where people are sitting?
We kind of break it down. So we have a little handout so everybody can see kind of where the conversation will flow. And we start off, you know, the presenter gives a little bit of background on the topic. We open it up to questions. And then from there, we look at the handout. And is there a particular question the audience wants to go to? We'll do a small group. We'll come together and talk about it then. And that's really where Ellie comes in. And she can, you know, pick up the points that she kind of hears in these smaller conversations and then draw them out and kind of discuss as a whole, too, where are we going with this?
So the handout kind of helps organize the flow of the day?
Yeah, it gives people something to hold on to, scribble on, look ahead.
Kayla, any complaints about the title or the concept?
We've had a couple where people are like, well, you should have phrased it this way. And the reality is, you know, we only have so much space on a poster. So it's from a marketing perspective a little bit. But then we encourage people, you know, if you have an issue with this, you should definitely come. This is what this space is for. This is to talk about it. I mean, you might not be able to have this conversation at work, at the dinner table, at your church. But here, this is an equalizing space. Everybody has the same amount of time to talk, to have a discussion.
Well, how did you pick these venues, the Tap Room in Minot and Laughing Sun Brewing Company in Bismarck?
We kind of just put our feelers out. I'm originally from Minot, so I kind of knew where a good space would be. We had a lot of – Laughing Sun is always so good at bringing in different – you know, they do poetry. They had a yoga event going on. So we kind of look for places where it's a little bit more open to trying new programs and bringing in different people.
Are these places doing other things at the same time, or is Think and Drink what they're doing at that time, which is – 12:30 to 3 in Minot and 1 to 3 in Bismarck.
Yep, so we open the doors at 12:30. We give 1 to 3. People usually stay a little bit longer because by then you've had a couple of drinks and the conversation is flowing. But we book out the whole venue, so we make sure this is the designated time, designated space to have these conversations.
Ellie, do you have any input on the subjects or do they come to you?
I haven't so far, but it's been great what we've wound up with. And I'm excited to think about pretty much any subject. And so for now, I've just been pleased with what has been presented to me.
As a moderator, that can be kind of a difficult position sometimes because you might have strong feelings one way or the other. How do you approach that?
Well, I guess I think that my role is really to help people bring their own thoughts forward. And, you know, my knowledge on a subject may be useful, but I'm tasked with helping make an inclusive space where lots of viewpoints are allowed and can be taken seriously and respectfully. So I see my role as not really overvaluing my own viewpoint, I guess.
Okay. Kayla, can people pitch program ideas? How do you develop a theme?
It's kind of what comes to us. So we're always looking, you know, for different scholars with different backgrounds. I mean, obviously, we've got a variety this year. We're talking about Harry Potter. We're talking about Russia. So we go from pop culture to these big big discussions, and either scholars approach us or we'll just hear from somebody like, I really want to talk about this, and we'll try and track somebody down who has a background in that and is willing to spend an afternoon drinking with us.
We're talking about the North Dakota Humanities Council's Think and Drink, a twice-monthly Sunday opportunity to listen to interesting ideas and conversation. Kayla Schmidt is the program coordinator for the Humanities Council, and Dr. Ellie Shockley is the moderator of the Bismarck presentations. The one coming up in Minot this Sunday at the tap room is titled, Do You Want Fries with Your Curriculum? Kayla, what's that about?
So we have Dr. Dan Kahn, and he's going to be looking at, when we think about education, what do we want our kids to take from that, and us as adults and continuously learning, what are we picking up on? So it's especially, you know, we live in a world where advertising is everywhere, and is that starting to leak into some of our education? So it'll be interesting. And too, like all the other ones, you know, what really are the values? Should kids, you know, leave school like very proficient at marketing, or is that somehow inhibiting what we should be focusing on?
And we do have these kind of public-private partnerships that have been developing as ways to leverage funding and things like that that can maybe occasionally muddy the waters.
Absolutely.
Do the presenters get compensated?
Yeah, we always make sure with the humanities that we give our scholars some adequate funding, and they also get a drink with their with their presentation. So we will find some way to make sure we pay you back. But it's important that, you know, we give scholars and North Dakota professionals the opportunity to have these conversations and still continue to make a living.
What do you expect from the presenters?
So we always make sure that they have a handout available, that they've really found like a subject that they're passionate in. So it doesn't, you know, necessarily have to be your dissertation, even if it's something you're, you know, you're a nerd at something, we'll take you. And so then they just have to be able to make sure that that conversation is good for the public too. So we're at kind of a level where everybody can interact. And Ellie definitely helps, you know, if there's something that's a little bit very technical terms, she can bring that into more of a way that everybody will understand.
Ellie, do you talk to the presenters before this, or is that day, you know, your first presentation from that person?
If they are in the area, I'll meet with them in person if I can, but phone calls are the way that I've been solving that. And I feel like, you know, an introduction over email is a start, but really hearing each other's voice over the phone, if not in person, really starts to build the camaraderie so that we have, so that it really flows during the event itself. And so I can just get really get a solid sense of what they're going for.
Well, these titles are intriguing. Do You Want Fries with Your Curriculum this Sunday? And then two Sundays later, Investigating Biased Science. So, Kayla, do you keep going back to the same well, or do you always have a different presenter?
We try to have a different presenter. A lot of these ones, you know, because this is our first time going into Minot and starting this one, I really want to start expanding for the whole state. I mean, that's what the Humanities North Dakota, we're trying to get a little bit further out from just this central area. So we might reuse scholars. So if somebody looks at our website and they say, well, I really want to talk about, you know, Game of Thrones in my community, we have somebody lined up for that. But we really want to try and bring people from all across the state, and, you know, we compensate for travel, but we want to kind of build this interconnection between communities and scholars from all different universities.
Well, what about those of us who teeter on the edge, like on the eastern edge here in Fargo or the western edge in Williston?
We are looking for places to hold these events for, you know, facilitators who want to help either moderate or, you know, take tickets at the door, that kind of thing. So we have if you go to humanitiesnd.org, there's a little box. So if you want something in your community, let us know. And we're looking to get into those areas for sure.
I was going to say, I mean, there are craft breweries just about everywhere in Fargo. I mean,
yeah,
about every block now.
That's it. It's probably finding the one who will take us and is willing to take on these conversations.
So what does it take to start one with the Humanities Council then? What do you expect?
So really, you know, we want a place that will, you know, let us take over the entire establishment for a couple of hours. It's just a matter of, we do everything online pretty much with tickets and things. So we'll send out posters, we'll send out postcards, whatever you need. So we just need somebody, you know, to show up, do a little introduction. We need some scholars. We need a moderator. It doesn't take that much. The people will come.
Ellie, how many people typically have been showing up this year in Bismarck?
Well, felt like every seat was occupied. And so, but I'm not sure what the seat count is.
Yeah, the capacity for Laughing Sun, we cap it at 60, and then in Minot, it is 45.
Well, those are nice sizes for this kind of presentation. Are there a lot of repeaters? A lot of people just keep coming to each one of these?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We see repeat face. I mean, Ellie was one, and that's why we stole her to be our moderator.
Well, as a program coordinator, what's next? I mean, this is a way for the Humanities Council to engage people in the council's work.
Absolutely. We're working with the Bismarck Larks. We did a program with them last summer, so we'd like to do that again this summer. We're doing some Think Outside, so if you want to check out the Badlands, Modhay Trail, we've got some of those programs on our website already, too.
Ellie, have you thought about being a presenter?
You know, to be honest, I actually hadn't. I suppose that I could. I would be open to it.
I was going to ask you later.
So. There we go. We've lit that fuse. What would you present about, do you think? I mean, what would be a provocative idea that I'm putting you on the spot, but what kind of thing would you like to pursue?
Well, that's a good question. My theoretical background is in political psychology and social identity. So I might think a little bit about those themes and figure how they intersect with something really interesting to people right now. But so I think there's no limit to what that could look like.
Well, that is kind of interesting. Political psychology and social identity. Break that down for a layman.
Well, political psychology is essentially it exists at the intersection of psychology and political science. So how can we understand people's political attitudes and political behaviors through a psychological lens, which is really looking at individuals' attitudes and behaviors, cognitions. And social identity is just really there's a lot of literature there, and it's a very broad field, but it's basically that, you know, we identify with social groups. We don't simply have individual identities, so we can identify with our gender, with our racial or ethnic group, or we can identify because we love some sports team. So those are the themes that I'm most expert in and most passionate about, and I think political psychology has become extremely popular recently. And I like to make jokes that I had no idea that I'd been training for something that would become so huge and such a focus of so many lay people.
I was going to say the social media and the current maelstrom around elections and the way we debate issues in this country has been pretty instructive.
Definitely.
And this is probably something we should know more about. I mean, we are probably always being manipulated in a way by a politician, but the techniques these days are much more sophisticated.
Yeah, and so maybe that'll be some topic that we'll have to dive into and figure out what do people need to know the most about. There's a lot that people really deserve to know more about.
We should mention that it costs $15 at the door. It includes one drink, and again, you have to be 21 or older. And the doors open at 12:30 in Minot and in Bismarck. The program runs until 3 o'clock. And how long a season do you have, Kayla?
So we kind of stick around with spring with these programs. You know, everybody's cooped up. You want to get out and do something different. So this year in, let's see, Bismarck, we finish up at the end of April, and then the last one is in May in Minot.
Well, we look forward to keeping you a lot busier. It'd be fun to have them in Bismarck, Minot, Fargo, Grand Forks, Dickinson, Williston, you name the place. There's lots of opportunity here for people to have interesting discussion in a casual environment.
Absolutely.
Kayla Schmidt, Program Coordinator for the North Dakota Humanities Council, and Dr. Ellie Shockley, the moderator for the Bismarck Think and Drink Sessions. Thank you again for being with us today on Main Street.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll have more Main Street in a moment.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them in Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Learn more at bushfoundation.org.
To innovate, you must first start with an idea.
Anything is possible.
An engineering college in Lima designed a giant advertising billboard that absorbs air humidity and converts it into purified water.
Hi, this is Guy Raz, host of the TED Radio Hour on NPR. I'm inviting you to join me every Sunday here on Prairie Public.
In Silicon Valley, no one even takes you seriously unless you've had two failed startups. In other words, we're raising our girls to be perfect, and we're raising our boys to be brave.
Every week, we pick a theme and we interview some of the greatest inventors, thinkers, writers, and artists from around the world.
If you analyze the skull and crossbones and Blackbeard's other design strategies like that, it's clear he was a very, very smart designer indeed.
People who've given TED Talks on technology, entertainment, and design.
If we start now, we can be ready for the next epidemic.
We examine fresh approaches to new problems, and we explore astonishing ways of thinking.
Gilligan's Island.
Apparently, it's one long parable. That's the TED Radio Hour, every Sunday at noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, on Prairie Public, with me, Guy Raz.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Guns are very much in the news again. The recent murderous rampage at a high school in Parkland, Florida, roused student activists and revived calls for changes in our nation's gun policies. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy represents Connecticut, where in December 2012, 20 children and 6 adults were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown. Murphy says the NRA has turned support for guns into support at the polls for years, and he wants more Democrats to be as outspoken about gun control as he is. However, as Scott Detrow reported today on NPR's Morning Edition, the potent politics over guns in states like North Dakota make some policymakers hesitant to enter the fray.
Unlike after previous mass shootings, the push in Washington to do something feels much more real and sustained. President Trump met with lawmakers from both parties in the White House cabinet room yesterday. Murphy is keeping his expectations low.
Until people get voted out of office because they're supporting the NRA, nothing is likely going to happen here of significance.
For years, Murphy has urged Democrats to go on offense and campaign hard against Republicans who block gun control. He points to polls like a recent Quinnipiac University survey in Florida, the site of the most recent mass shooting, but also for some of the most lax gun laws in the nation. More than 9 in 10 respondents support universal background checks. And more than 6 in 10 back banning assault-style weapons.
Democrats used to be so scared of this issue. They thought it was a political loser, even though the polls told you that background checks was popular. Today, there's absolutely no question. I mean, this issue just pops off of the polls. Nothing polls as good as universal background checks in the country.
But while Democrats are getting louder and louder about gun control, many still do seem pretty hesitant to make it a focal point. Take New Jersey Congressman Bill Pascrell. This week, he called out Republicans for repealing a rule meant to block people with mental illness from buying guns.
We need a concerted and comprehensive effort to address gun violence and gun violence epidemic, the epidemic in this country.
But asked whether Democrats trying to flip Republican-held New Jersey seats should focus on guns, Pascrell hesitated.
Well, if you ask them what's the top 5 priorities, this probably wouldn't be in the top 5 priorities for them. Health and taxes are, but this is maybe between 5 and 10.
A few minutes later.
If you take this as the one issue you're going to win on, I'd advise you to probably be prepared to lose.
So don't expect gun control ads to drown out commercials about Trump or jobs, especially for the 10 Democrats trying to keep Senate seats in states Trump won. Still, Democratic strategist Karen Finney thinks gun control can fit into a broader campaign message.
You've either voted to keep us safe or you have voted with the NRA. I think you can make it that clear. And again, I think that is a statement of values.
Democrat Connor Lamb is trying to walk this line in Western Pennsylvania's upcoming special House election. The district includes some of the high-income, high-education Pittsburgh suburbs and some of the most conservative pro-Trump stretches of the state. Here he was at a recent debate.
What I would like to see is a background check system that actually works. Right now, it is full of holes.
But when it comes to an assault weapons ban?
I do not support that. I've been thinking about violent crime for a long time as a prosecutor, and most of the cases that I saw were committed with handguns and by people who are already not allowed to have those firearms.
Democrats say their candidates need to be in tune with their voters. And in this Western Pennsylvania district, Lamb's initial TV ads featured images of him shooting a rifle. Scott Detrow, NPR News.
Coming up on Main Street, UND journalism professor Mark Trahan talks about leadership for the Indian Health Service. Chef Rosie offers tips for using that meat in a can called Spam. And Ashley Thornburg and I will share our What's Happening calendar of things to do this weekend. First, though, the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
MDU is buying an expansion of a wind farm in southwestern North Dakota. MDU already owns the Spirit Wind Farm, first phase. It's a 107.5-megawatt farm with 43 turbines. Elite Clean Energy developed it and is developing the second phase, which will add another 16 turbines and produce another 48 megawatts. MDU had a power purchase agreement with an option to buy it outright. MDU spokesman Mark Hansen says the purchase of the expansion project makes sense and should save MDU electric customers money versus buying energy on the open market.
We had everything in place, which is a big reason this became a really good low-cost option for our customers. We had all the easements for the expansion, all the site approval, all the infrastructures in place from the first phase. So this was a very economical add-on to that site in terms of adding some needed energy for our customers.
With that purchase, the renewable portion of MDU's portfolio goes from 22% to 27%. Construction will begin on the expansion this spring and should be online by late this year. The cost is $85 million. North Dakota's economy grew during the month of February. The state's reading on the Business Conditions Index, a monthly survey of Midwestern supply managers, rose to 53.3 in February from 49.6 in January. Any reading over 50 indicates economic growth. Creighton University economics professor Dr. Ernie Goss conducts the monthly survey. He says the survey indicates the manufacturing and energy sectors are expanding, but there were some warning signals regarding the inflation gauge.
The Federal Reserve, they watch that and they watch other indicators. And yesterday and this week, Jerome Powell, the new head of the Federal Reserve, indicated that the Fed is going to be raising rates by four times instead of three times, which is what the market expected. Now, the reason they're raising rates on the short end, short-term interest rates, is because they are seeing more inflationary pressures. So to nip that in the bud, they're going to be raising rates. I think they'll be raising them more aggressively than we expected last year at this time.
Goss says across the region, rural areas are struggling due to low agricultural prices, while energy sectors are expanding as fuel prices increase. He says states like North Dakota with large energy sectors should continue to strengthen in the months ahead. And there's been a lot of talk and speculation about a Colorado low that might bring significant snow and wind to our area. But there are still lots of variables as to who will be impacted and who will not.
Really, all we know at this point is that the potential for significant impacts is present across the entire region, and that, I guess, is about it.
Tom Greffenauer is with the Grand Forks National Weather Service.
Right now, the potential impact area is rather large. It probably encompasses, you know, most of North Dakota, South Dakota, most of Minnesota, most of northern Wisconsin. As we get closer to the event, that potential impact area should become smaller as confidence increases with the details of the system.
Greffenauer says if you have travel plans for Sunday and Monday, make sure you're aware of the potential and keep abreast of the forecast. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Who should run the Indian Health Service? That's the subject of today's Trahant Reports. And Mark Trahant isn't talking about a specific individual. Rather, what kind of person is best suited to this leadership role?
The Trump administration has withdrawn the nomination of Robert Weaver to lead the agency. Weaver, a member of the Quapaw Tribe of Oklahoma, had a background in private insurance, working with tribes to set up plans to cover tribal members. Weaver's nomination was sidetracked after the Wall Street Journal reported serious misstatements on his resume. In a letter to tribal leaders, Weaver said the president has been an ardent supporter of fixing Indian health throughout this process. He said he will fight to give voice to the change needed at IHS until the mission is complete, the delivery of timely, high-quality health care for Indian country, no matter where you live. The mission. That's the key word here. The mission of the Indian Health Service has become so distorted that even policymakers cannot or will not articulate the challenges. All of the discourse about the Indian Health Service continues to be about a federal agency that delivers health care to American Indians and Alaska Natives. And within that story, there are so many clinics and hospitals that only require more order and funding in order to carry out even basic health care. The system is failing. Only the IHS story is much more complex. We need to think differently about Indian health. most of the Indian health system is managed by tribes or nonprofits. The federal role is that of a funding agent, and it sets standards. But even that is misleading, because it is Medicaid, not the Indian Health Service, that's often the largest source of funding for tribal and nonprofit facilities. The administration claims it's protecting the Indian Health Service budget, all the while proposing deep cuts into Medicaid. There is a disconnect, and the proof is found in the budget. The line item for collections, that is money for Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance, is roughly $1.2 billion. That's a number that has not changed much, despite a huge expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. But when you talk to tribal and nonprofit administrators, as I have, there's a different story to tell. Medicaid is now more important to local budgets than the IHS itself. The expansion of Medicaid explains a lot about the shortages within the Indian health system. The federal Indian Health Service will take Medicaid funds, but it's not growing the pot. Tribes and nonprofits have done that, and there is more money for Indian health in states that have expanded Medicaid. This is not the Indian Health Service we grew up with, and the next director of the Indian Health Service needs to acknowledge this complexity and own the new story. If I had my way, the next IHS director would have a solid background in medicine and Medicaid. I'm Mark Trahant.
You can follow Mark Trahant and read his blog at Trahant Reports, that's TRAHANT reports.com. Next on Main Street, Chef Tim Rosendahl talks about the spam that comes in a can.
Coming up this week on the Thomas Jefferson Hour, we have a very special conversation with a very special guest, an old friend of yours.
An out-of-character edition of the Jefferson Hour with my friend Dr. Joseph Ellis, who was in Ken Burns' documentary about Thomas Jefferson, and he's the author of 10 books, The 11th Coming, including his most important book, perhaps, American Sphinx, The Character of Thomas Jefferson.
It was fascinating to listen to the two of you exchange ideas and views on Mr. Jefferson.
He is, I think, the most insightful historian working in the early national period, and he's effectively produced a kind of a Plutarchian epic about the founding fathers and some of the founding mothers.
There are many, many more books on my list to read after this week's conversation.
A wonderful, whimsical conversation with now retired Dr. Joseph Ellis of Massachusetts.
Join us for all that and more, our conversation with Dr. Joseph Ellis on this week's Thomas Jefferson Hour.
Sunday at 11 Central, 10 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
Sometimes a tiny tweak, a nudge, can lead to a big change. Like, for example,
slicing up apples and putting them into a plastic bag greatly increases apple consumption by kids.
By like 70%.
And that's because we've made it easy.
The power of nudging. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Sunday at noon, 11 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg and Chef Rosie, because it's time to stir the pot a bit, and this time we're going to stir it about spam.
And speaking of stirring the pot here, he has gone on to say that there are a couple of top quality ingredients in spam, and I think most of us just sort of think meat in a can.
Mm. You know, when you think of spam, all of these years, all we thought of is that mystery meat in the can, but it actually stands for shoulders of pork and ham, and the first two ingredients are fresh shoulder and cured ham. That's what Hormel calls it, but there's another name that those alphabet letters come from, and that is special processed American meat. The Hormel executives haven't issued the word of what exactly is it, but both of those have been used for many years.
And it's been around for many years, longer than I have.
1937. We're going on 75, 80 years here. Pretty amazing stuff.
So how did it get so popular?
Well, in World War II, when K-rations were the thought of the day and what soldiers looked forward to in war, the one ingredient, the one item that they look forward to getting to most in their K-rations was that can of Spam, because it was very tasty. They knew it was made in America, and there was so many things that they could do with it.
Well, like what?
Well, the beautiful thing is it's because it's a pre-cooked, totally cooked product, when you open the can, it's ready to eat. It can be grilled. It can be fried. It can be held over an open fire. It's great broiled over an open flame. And then when you get – and people always open the can of Spam and they see all that gelatinous liquid around it. And if you're not familiar with aspic or gelatin, you immediately think, oh, what is this liquid? How quickly can I throw it away? That's actually the natural juices from the fresh pork and the cured ham cooked down. As we know, when you cook down meats, the marrow in the bones – is filled with gelatin, and that's what that gelatinous material comes from, and it's very flavorful.
Well, as you mentioned, it was popular in World War II. My father came home, and we had Spam for dinner more than once. And I remember my mother used to fry it.
You know, after World War II, it was so popular that it actually had ties to patriotism, had ties to supporting our country. There was a time when the Hormel Company in Austin, Minnesota, hired 60 ladies and an orchestra of 16 in groups that traveled the country just to promote Spam and also to promote patriotism and support our troops coming home, which we've had some difficulty in the past with some other wars here.
So this is like freedom fries almost.
Yeah, that's a good similarity.
What kind of, do you have the normal sorts of health benefits and health disadvantages associated with pork?
Well, we're looking at 1,300 calories for a can, and a can is about four ounces.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's fat, you know, and we've been through bacon and we've been through other pork products, and fat does win. But, it can be sliced paper thin. It's great with grilled cheese sandwiches. When it's sliced thin, it's, you know, call it what you want. It's ham. And it's wonderful in a grilled ham sandwich. One of my favorite preparations of Spam is to take it and grind it with breadcrumbs and egg yolks and fresh herbs and your favorite cheese, Parmesan, and make Spam fritters. And make wonderful fritters, whether they're pan-fried or deep-fried. Very good.
Well, here's a good trivia question for listeners out there. In what state in the United States do people consume the most Spam?
Well, that's a pretty easy question because the state of Hawaii, the people of Hawaii consume almost 20 times as much as any other state in the union. Whether that's because of the fact that you can buy it by the cargo container and hold it in your basement and it lasts for many, many years, or the fact that maybe McDonald's actually rolled out Spam in McDonald's in Hawaii, and it's been used there since 2009, I believe, and it is a... it's been on their menus ever since.
You'd think there would be some kind of showing for Minnesota where Spam is actually made.
Well, you know, you're probably right, but it's just Hawaii for some reason, because it's a water-locked state, that's probably the reason that it, because World War II and Iwo Jima and all of the things of Pearl Harbor that happened in Hawaii, it's just become a very popular meat consumption there.
Well, now let's get to the nitty-gritty. Let's cook with this stuff. How does Chef Rosie like to prepare it?
Well, we only see one kind of ham in this neck of the woods, and that's the Spam we see in the blue and yellow can. But there are some other varieties available. There's a honey Spam. There's a hot spice Spam, as well as a bacon Spam. So now we just add another pork fat ingredient on there if we don't have enough pork in there already. The whole idea is to, because we're using it in replacement of ham, we're using it as a replacement to bacon. What I find that whether it's when you grill it and you caramelize the sugar, especially in that honey spam, it really gets a nice crystal caramelized. You can caramelize the sugar in the Spam and it gets a layer of crystallized that honey, which is really good. So for sandwiches as a replacement to ham all over, it's great with eggs in the morning. If you've never had, we've all had ham and eggs. Well, you need to try Spam and eggs because it's pretty darn good. And the most important thing to understand in this whole discussion of Spam is the fact that those first two ingredients, pork shoulder and ham, are no different than the ingredients in the ham that you buy at the grocery store, no different than the bacon you buy at the store. You know, it's cured. It's not smoked. Don't confuse Spam with smoked bacon or a smoked ham. It's only cured, but it is a fully cooked product and it is a very safe product. And I've never heard of a recall for any kinds of bacteria from Spam because of the way it's cooked.
And yet anytime we get email we don't want, we call it spam.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The fact that all of our unwanted email since, I don't know when we started calling it spam, but the people in Austin, Minnesota got to be pretty proud of that fact that we all know what spam is now and we know where the word comes from. It's pretty amazing.
Well, it's as ubiquitous as email, apparently. And in Austin, Minnesota, don't they have the Spam Museum?
They have the Spam Museum. There's a spam parade. There's all kinds of... And not only in Austin, Minnesota. In my research, I found that in many other cities across the country, they find a reason to celebrate the infamous spam. In South Florida, I found that they're in... Public education, not only is spam offered on their menus, but it's also used in art classes. They use spam, and spam is made for them especially, and it comes in colors, red, blue, yellow, green, and orange.
The spam itself, just the can?
No, nope, like, the spam itself. It's dyed for them, and only in South Florida. It's the only place I found that it's, for some reason, it's taken on there, and it's still there today.
A little bit of Mardi Gras almost in the spam. Okay. Well, if you have a question for Chef Rosie, here's how to get in touch with him.
Send it to us. Email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or on Facebook, Main Street at Prairie Public.
Thanks, Rosie.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What's happening is next.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. This week I chat with Nathan Myhrvold, former chief technology officer of Microsoft and also author of Modernist Bread. He explores the science behind bread baking in 6 very big volumes. We also offer a recipe for smashed potatoes with horseradish, and J. Kenji Lopez-Alt weighs in on the very best way to cook meat. All that and more coming up on Milk Street Radio from PRX.
Sunday at 1 Central, noon Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
Grammy winner, Fantastic Negrita.
Ain't good enough.
Spellbinding singer from Duluth, Galen Lee.
Tell me we've got.
And in-demand festival band, Tank and the Bangas. What do they have in common? Well, they were the first 3 winners of NPR's Tiny Desk Contest. Attention, prairie musicians. It's time to hone your chops and enter the 2018 NPR Tiny Desk Contest. The winning band will perform in front of NPR's iconic Tiny Desk in D.C., tour the U.S. with NPR and contest sponsor Lagunitas, and appear on NPR's quiz show Ask Me Another.
Hello, everyone in this office!
Create a new video showing your band performing an original song in front of the Tiny Desk of your choice, then upload the clip onto YouTube. The winner will be chosen by a panel of judges, including Sylvanesso, Gabby Moreno, and Bob Boylan of All Songs Considered.
And the winner of the Tiny Desk contest is...
Entry forms must be in by 11 p.m. Central, March 25th at tinydeskcontest.npr.org. So, gotta practice, dust off that desk, and get to work.
No time for dreaming.
And then enter NPR's 2018 Tiny Desk Contest.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Every Thursday on Main Street, we ask that question because the wonderful weekend is looming, and Ashley Thornburg and I look at our calendar of stuff to do.
Dr. Seuss Party, this Friday, the 2nd in Minot. March 2nd is Dr. Seuss's birthday. I am not at all ashamed to admit that he is one of my favorite authors to this day. I love to read a good Dr. Seuss book. So you can come and enjoy crafts, games, movies, other activities that will be based on any number of his beloved books. This event is free and geared for kids 3 to 12, but I think you can ignore that, and just anybody who likes Dr. Seuss can go check this out Friday, March 2nd in Minot at the Ward County Public Library. And it's free.
You can take in the Club Parisien Ballet to Broadway Friday evening in Grand Forks at the Empire Arts Center. Experience the story of young love and rising stardom in the bohemian world of Paris and the famous Can-Can at Club Parisien. That's Act 1. Act 2 includes segments of Ballet to Broadway featuring the unique blends of West Side Story, Chicago, 42nd Street, and more. Don't miss this one-night-only concert. It's 7 o'clock Friday evening in Grand Forks at the Empire Arts Center. It's $15.
Fun snowshoeing event this Saturday in Minot at the National Wildlife Refuge there. Check out the outdoors. Be outside as it's gotten, you know, slightly warmer. And it's technically meteorological spring here already. And the rest of spring is coming, we promise. Learn about wildlife tracks and just enjoy some time outside. You also get hot cocoa and snacks. Snowshoe rentals are free, but they are limited, so you want to get there on time to guarantee that you can get some snowshoes if you need to rent them. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the J. Clark Sailor National Wildlife Refuge in Minot, Saturday, and it's free.
And there might be some parts of the states with some pretty blustery, miserable weather on Saturday going into the early
Quiet
part of
you.
Next week. What is good government in North Dakota? That's a public conversation Wednesday, next Wednesday, March 7th, in Watford City at the Rough Rider Center. NDSU's Northern Plains Ethics Institute and ThinkND are set to host a conversation about what is good government in our state. And the discussion will feature moderators Dana Whippo, assistant professor in political science and economics at Dickinson State University, and Cecile Wehrman, publisher of the Crosby Journal and Tioga Tribune. You've heard her occasionally on our Editor's Roundtable here on Main Street. It's 7 p.m., again, Wednesday, March 7th, in Watford City at the Rough Rider Center, and the cost is free.
Spring into spring, Saturday, March 3rd at the Turtle River State Park. Get ready for the warmer weather by adding a little green in your life. And you can make your own planters and flower beds and learn how to use up good small space effectively for growing plants. 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday, March 3rd at the Turtle River State Park. Spring into spring, and it's free.
German Romantic Thoughts and Artists gets underway Monday, March 5th. It continues following Mondays through the 26th in March in Jamestown at the Arts Center. Starting with those titans of the Teutonic world, Beethoven and Goethe, you'll hear the progress of German Romantic art and thought through the 19th century up until the eve of World War I, advancing an art that places individual experience, thoughts, and feelings. And German artists and thinkers were profoundly shaping the 20th century and the world we live in today. It will be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. again those Monday evenings in Jamestown at the Arts Center. The cost for the series is $40 to $50.
Music of the World, Saturday the 3rd in Dickinson at Our Savior's Lutheran Church. This is the Dickinson State University Chorale Concert featuring music from Africa, the British Isles, Israel, Italy, Japan, Latin America, and Russia. Boy, when they say music of the world, they're not kidding here. This is going to be performed again by the Dickinson State University Chorale and Chamber Singers, 3 to 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, March 3rd in Dickinson at Our Savior's Lutheran Church. And it's free.
There will be a reception for the Hinamatsuri Japanese Dolls Exhibit on Saturday in Fargo, downtown at the Spirit Room. The Northern Plains Botanic Garden Society and the Spirit Room Galleries will display a collection of Japanese dolls through April 14th. That's at 111 Broadway, downtown Fargo. A reception will be held on Saturday with Ph.D. Ann Broughton, assistant professor and curator of the Emily P. Reynolds Costume Collection, speaking on the dolls' historic role in American and Japanese culture. She'll be speaking at 7:30 Saturday evening. The treasured collection of Japanese dolls was given to the Northern Plains Botanic Garden Society by a Japanese friendship organization in recognition of their plans to build a Japanese garden in North Fargo. 7 o'clock Saturday, that's March 3rd, Fargo at the Spirit Room. The cost is free.
The Apollo Chamber Players are performing on Tuesday, March 6th in Moorhead at the Christensen Recital Hall. That is on the campus of Concordia College. This is the Houston-based Apollo Chamber Players, and they are going to be performing a lot of fun classical music. This gets going at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 6th in Moorhead at Concordia College.
Well, I'm going to make my pick for All this right. week, and it's Tartuffe. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I went to a production of Tartuffe at Concordia College. They did a great job in a traditional showing of this Molière classic, and Molière was born a few years after Shakespeare died, so it's been around a few years. Tartuffe will run tonight through Saturday in Fargo at NDSU's Walsh Studio Theater. If you're not acquainted with the story, it resonates today. It's the scheming con man Tartuffe charms his way into Orgon's household with plans to marry his daughter, seduce his wife, and run off with his fortune. It's one of the world's great plays. Molière's hilarious farce takes an over-the-top twist in the style of Commedia dell'arte that NDSU is applying to their interpretation that will resonate with contemporary audiences. 7:30 p.m., that is tonight through Saturday at NDSU at Walsh Studio Theater. The cost from $10 to $20. What's your pick?
My pick is the Art Link Fiddle Festival this Saturday and Sunday, March 3rd and 4th in Bismarck at the former Governor's Mansion. You get to hear lots of string students performing 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they get joined by the Bismarck Mandan Youth Symphony Orchestra performing. Again, Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon. And Sunday, beginning at 3 p.m., the Art Link Fiddle Festival in Bismarck at the former Governor's Mansion. And it's free.
Oh, that price is right. That's what's happening.
This is Dakota Daybook for March 1st. Jack McCall was an Old West legend. He left a name for himself, but not a good one. An impromptu group of locals charged him with killing Wild Bill Hickok in a Deadwood saloon in August of 1876. A hasty miner's trial ended with McCall's acquittal, but the feds disputed the jurisdiction, being inside a Sioux reservation on federal land. Also, Deadwood had no court system. McCall was arrested and extradited to Yankton, which was Dakota's territorial capital at the time. He pleaded not guilty to Hickok's murder. McCall didn't testify at his federal trial, and his defense could find no witnesses for his cause. A 12-man jury convicted him in December of 1876. McCall's attorneys tried to appeal, and he even allegedly tried to escape from Yankton's jail, but he was sentenced to execution by hanging, and that's exactly what happened. On this date in 1877, Jack McCall was the first person executed by the feds in Dakota Territory, and quite possibly the first government execution overall in Dakota. Yankton residents protested his hanging in town, so the gallows were moved to just north of Yankton on school section land. A priest was with McCall almost constantly the day before his death, even to the gallows. McCall prayed before his execution, and reportedly died with a crucifix in his hand. He was 24 years old. McCall was buried in a Catholic cemetery near the gallows, but the graveyard was later moved. His final resting place is unknown. Before statehood for North and South Dakota in 1889, at least four other men were executed in Dakota Territory, all for murder. Today's Dakota Daybook is written by Jack Dura. I'm Earl Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
I am desperately trying to get out of the way of that massive, massive oil tanker. Did I mention, by the way, that I am sitting rowing in a bathtub?
Join us next time for stories of crossing the English Channel, motherhood, and secret agents. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
Friday on Main Street, we'll hold our monthly Editor's Roundtable. Our guests always include Prairie Public News Director Dave Thompson, and tomorrow he'll be joined by KFYR News Director and anchor Monica Hannon and Tony Bender of Central Dakota News. He handles six newspapers, including the Ashley Tribune, the Wishick Star, and the Napoleon Homestead. We hope you'll join us for our Editor's Roundtable on Friday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.